Chapter 45.
We've reached Baker Street in time for me to realise that I have no handbag. I have no means to pay the fare.
Here you are, miss,
the driver says, helping me from the cab. Oh dear, I say, I seem to have forgotten my handbag. If you will give me your name and address, I'll see that you are paid handsomely, I promise.
And the Queen's me mum,
he says. I'm in earnest, sir. A constable makes his way down the opposite side of the street, the brass buttons of his uniform glinting in the gloom. My blood quickens.
Tell it to the constable, then,
he says.
Oi, Bob, over here.
I make a run for it, the constable's whistle blowing sharply behind me. Quickly, I slip into the shadows of an alley and wait. The snow has turned to sleet. The tiny, hard ice bites at my cheeks, makes my nose run. The houses shimmer in the new sheen of frost and gaslight. Every breath is a painful rasp, a fight for air against the cold. But it is more than that. The magic has begun to wear me down. I'm feeling odd, as if I've a fever. The constable's steps are sharp and close.
And then he said she was the Duchess of Kent,
the cabbie explains. I flatten myself against the wall, my heart thumping hard against my ribs. My breath is locked up tight as a criminal in irons.
You might do well not to pick up odd women, mate,
the constable says.
How was I to know she was odd?
The cabbie protests. Arguing on, they pass within inches of me, without so much as a glance in my direction, till their footsteps and voices are no more than faint echoes that are finally swallowed by the night. The breath I've been holding back comes out of me in a whoosh. I waste no time. I'm hobbling down the street and to Miss Moore's flat as quickly as I can move in my weakened state. The house is dark. I rap loudly, hoping I can devise a ruse that will get me inside. Mrs. Porter sticks her head out the top window, calling down irritably.
What you want, then?
Mrs. Porter, I'm terribly sorry to disturb you. I've an urgent message for Miss Moore.
She's not at home.
Yes, I know, and it's all my fault. I feel I shall faint. My face is numb from the cruel pelting of the sleet. At any moment the constable could come back. I've got to get inside. I just need a place to hide, to think, to rest.
Here now, it's late. Come back tomorrow.
Footsteps echo on the slick cobblestones. Someone is coming. Dear Mrs. Porter, I say desperately, it's Felicity Worthington, Admiral Worthington's daughter.
Admiral Worthington's daughter, you say? Oh, me dear child, how is the Admiral?
Quite well, thank you. I meant, no, he's not well at all, and that is why I've come for Miss Moore. It's quite urgent. May I wait for her? Please let me in, just long enough to get my bearings. Down the street I can hear the steady clip-clopping of the constable's shoes returning.
Well,
Mrs. Porter says. She's already in her nightclothes. I wouldn't ask, except that I know you are a good and kind soul. I'm certain that my father will wish to thank you personally, once he is able. Mrs. Porter preens at this.
I won't be a minute.
The constable's lantern spreads fingers of light in my direction. Please, Mrs. Porter, do hurry. She's at the latch, letting me in.
Evening, Mrs. Porter,
the constable calls out, tipping his hat to her.
Evening, Mr. John,
she answers. She closes the door. I steady myself with a hand against the wall.
How nice to have company. So unexpected. Let me take your coat.
I pull my coat tight at my aching throat. Dear Mrs. Porter, I croak, forgive me, but I'm afraid I must get to my business with Miss Moore and then return to Papa's bedside. Mrs. Porter looks as if she's bitten into a piece of chocolate cake, only to discover it has a pickled filling.
It's not right for me to admit you to her room. I run an honest establishment, see?
Yes, of course, I say. Mrs. Porter ponders her dilemma for a moment before emptying a vase on a side table and shaking the key to Miss Moore's rooms from its hiding place.
This way, if you please.
I follow her up the narrow staircase and to Miss Moore's door.
But if she ain't back by 1:30, you'll have to leave,
she says, jangling the key in the lock. The door opens and I step inside. Yes, thank you. Please don't trouble yourself to wait, Mrs. Porter. I feel a draught here, and if you were to catch cold on my account, I should never forgive myself. This seems to mollify Mrs. Porter for the moment, and she leaves me, descending the stairs with a heavy step. I close the door behind me. In the dark, the room is unfamiliar, ominous. I slide my fingers along the yellowing wallpaper till I find the gas lamp. It hisses into life, the flame flickering against the glass shade. The room wakes from its slumber. The velvet settee, the globe on its stand, the writing desk in its usual state of shambles, the rows of well-loved books. The masks seem gruesome in the evening gloom. I can't bear to look at them. I take comfort in Miss Moore's paintings, the purple heather of Scotland, the craggy cliffs near the sea, the mossy caves in the woods behind Spence. I perch on the settee to calm myself, trying to make sense of everything. So tired. I want to sleep, but I can't. Not yet. I must think of what to do next. If the Rakshana are in league with Miss Macready, with Cersei herself, then they cannot be trusted. Kartik was supposed to kill me once I found the temple, but Kartik betrayed them to help me escape. The clock ticks off the minutes. 5, 10. Pulling aside the curtain, I peek out at the street but see no sign of Mr. Fowlson or the black carriage. A knock at the door nearly scares me to death. Mrs. Porter comes in with a letter.
"Dearie, you can stop waiting. Seems I overlooked this. Miss Moore left it on me side table this morning."
"This morning?" I repeat. "That isn't possible. Miss Moore is lost to the realms. Are you sure?"
"Oh, yes, I saw her leave. Haven't seen her since, though. But I only just read the letter. It says she's gone to be with family."
"But Miss Moore has no family," I say.
"Well, she does."
Mrs. Porter reads aloud.